Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damien McDonald. It is Wednesday, 20th of November, 2024. This is episode 337. Damien, can I talk a bit more about the Ambernic handheld gaming device that you sent me?
By all means. I know everyone's excited to hear an update. Absolutely.
It's taken me down some weird parenting rabbit holes.
Uh-huh.
So, the first, so I'm a bit, you know, being an educator and, you know, loving father, I'm a big proponent of gentle parenting. You know, I don't do things how my parents used to, you know, solving things with anger and violence and threats and stuff like that.
Handcuffs.
We've been playing this two-dimensional platforming game from the Super Nintendo called Mr. Nuts.
Okay.
Which sounds a bit rude, but it's not. It's about like a cute squirrel who goes on adventures, you know, like the forest and adventure parks and stuff. So I'm playing it with the kids, and then we get to this one boss, which I'll show you in a minute. The boss's name is Ogram Papas, and absolutely terrifying. I'm going to send it to you in a moment. And now, when Arthur's being disobedient, we threaten him by saying we're going to phone Ogram Papas and tell him that Arthur's been naughty. So this morning, he's like refusing to get Jess to school, and Bally's knocking on the door saying, oh, Ogram Papas is here, he's going to get you.
All right, let me see this boss, let me see this monster, right,
so man. Do you have your phone?
Right on my hand, yes.
Because I'm going to be sending you a lot of weird shit in the next 10 to 15 minutes.
All
probably
right.
Longer than that, if I can get away with it. So I can
finally dick pics talking
about this. Great. Right. So I'm going to send you some footage of Ogram Papas, and you can tell me, am I a good parent or a great parent by menacing my children with this?
Oh, there you go. Who does he look like to you? First name that pops in your head. He reminds me of
Michael Elgin.
Michael, okay. Yeah. You know, it's weird. All right. So, yeah, this is a, yeah, he looks like, again, bald at the top. He's got the beard going, and his eyeballs are coming, his multiple eyeballs coming out of his eye sockets. So it's
a big, scary, angry giant with like just an enraged expression on his face. and all his eyeballs are just popping out. There's just like hundreds of eyeballs just popping out the sockets and bouncing around everywhere. Just absolutely ghoulish. This is supposed to be a game that's appropriate for children. And we got to this part of the game and my kids are like, ah, turn it off. And now I've weaponized it against them to make them more obedient.
I bet you got a quiet house. I bet you got a clean house, right?
Right? So good.
Everything's getting done. Yeah, that's pretty fucked up. I mean, it's not crazy. It's not like it's, you know, but it's I could see where a little kid could be like, what the fuck? Yeah, just I'm watching it again. Now I can't stop watching it. And it's cool because when the eyeballs come out, like the eyebrows raise, it's pretty funny.
Yes, yeah, to allow the eyeballs to pop out. There's a lot going on there.
There is a lot going on.
It's got into it.
I know. Well, first of all, the background is fucking Windows XP, right? It's like, And then it's very Sonic the Hedgehog-y, I want to say. Am I off base with that?
Yeah, I mean, that was the sort of style at the time in the early 90s. You couldn't move for 2D platforming games with sort of cute anthropomorphic animal mascot characters.
I don't know what you just said, but yes. wow.
Lots of games like Sonic, basically.
Okay, gotcha. I think when I was growing up, we would get commercials for hockey, you know, Flyers play the fucking Bruins. And, you know, back in the day when they had those old timey style hockey masks, like, you know, like Jason, you know, there's full masked plastic things covered the face. They would show like a picture, like the Flyers goaltender at the time was Bernie Perrant. And it always used to scare the shit out of me. and that's what my parents did. So I can't say that you're advancing parenting by using this method, but it works because it definitely was used to their advantage as well. So there you go. Good job by
that's
you.
That's the first one. That's the first rabbit hole. Oh. Second one,
okay.
I've been playing Pokemon. Okay. The children have enjoyed that. You know, I think that's sort of, you know, relatively child-friendly thing, kind of little Pokemon adventures and enjoying all the, you know, nice animals and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that also led to us watching the Pokemon TV series. So I downloaded like the whole first season. And at some point during this playlist, I've been watching like a couple of episodes a day. The episodes changed, like one episode started playing and it was the Japanese one. Hmm. The Japanese theme song, they're all talking in Japanese. I was like, oh, what's going on here? Why is this episode Japanese? And then I quickly became aware that maybe my children shouldn't be watching this, and that I investigated, and my research led me to find out that there are several episodes of the Pokemon TV show that have been banned in the West
really?
For deeply inappropriate content. So I've found out four of them that have been banned, and I'm going to share you something from each of these, and you tell me if you think this is utter woke nonsense. Okay. That it's perfectly fine for my children to watch this, or if I'd be damaging them psychologically for the rest of their lives by sharing this to them.
All right. Can't wait. Are we ready? I can't wait to make this decision, but yes. Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah. You decide what they're supposed to be exposed to. So first, there have been several episodes removed that have any reference to this Pokemon, which is called Jinx.
Jinx. Okay. Jinx. Are they tits? Are they?
Yeah, they're tits.
Okay. Blonde. So it's like, I don't even know how to describe this. It's like a cross between like a pig and a duck, maybe, with a mask, I guess, and long blonde hair, right? And like the like cutouts where breasts would reside, and very voluptuous breasts, shall I say. Okay. Does it get like?
Can you see why that's been banned in the West?
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's that bad.
Okay, because what it's supposed to be, it's a Japanese myth of Yama Uba, which is like some kind of monster thing. But that design was considered by Western audiences to be a racial stereotype
of what
generated a lot of controversy
because of the mask.
I think it was sort of unfavorably compared to like racial caricatures.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anymore.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing. You're saying yes, green light, thumbs up. Show this to my children. Immerse them in this, and it's good and cool. Okay, fine. That's the first one.
Okay. I don't see. Okay.
Here's the next one. Right. Here we go. Sending this one. So this is from an episode called Beauty and the Beach.
All right.
And this shows the Team Rocket pair of Jesse, who the character with the red hair, who is a lady, and then James, who is the character with the blue hair, who is a gentleman. And I'm filibustering at the moment because it's either sending extremely slowly or it's deciding not to send to you. We're sending it on 4G. That's why.
Okay.
This is making for great audio.
It really is, but it's fine. I love it.
I'm waffle while I'm waiting for this to very, very slowly send to you. Right. While it's doing that, I'm going to send some of the others and see if these go any faster, which they absolutely won't.
Yeah. Well, look, the first one, again, I think that was a stretch to me. Like, that wasn't the first thing I thought of. I just thought, I saw the, boob it kind of pronounced, but like nothing, but it's not they're not like full fledged boobs. It's not like a picture of a boob. It's just like the cutout of the costume makes it seem like the boobs are more pronounced.
I think it was the racial element of it that generated more
controversy. I didn't see that. I'm sorry. I just didn't see it. I thought that was a mask. So that's maybe where I kind of fell off, but okay. All right. Whatever. I still have not received anything from space.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to send it via my computer.
Okay.
So, the original may send at some point, so it might send to you twice. But
that's all right.
Here we go.
It'll be worth it. So, what else is going on in your life? Anything?
Okay. Right. There it is. Got it. From Beauty and the Beach.
All right. Here she is. Dress as a woman, complete with fake inflatable breasts. The overt sexuality displayed by James during this episode. Okay.
So that character on the right is a man, and he's going incognito and disguising himself as a lady with inflatable breasts. Is this okay for me to show to my children? Yes or no?
Yeah. Okay. Here's my point. I'm going to say yes because I feel like they wouldn't know. Would they be able to pick up that character is, what would they understand the plot, or they're just watching images? Like, they wouldn't get the plot of this, right?
I think Esther Woods, she likes to repeat back to me what's going on to sort of check her understanding of events, and I think she is aware enough of James sort of presenting as a male character that this might lead to questions.
right. You know you're going to get... Okay, then you know you're going to get questions. So really, it's just a matter of whether you feel like fucking going down that rabbit hole. Again, the actual images and content really aren't that crazy. Like, it's not like it's...
I mean, that's nothing that they don't see from My Dear Wife.
It's nothing that they don't see...
in the bathroom getting ready.
You know, not for nothing, but like... Tom and Jerry would do shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, Tom would get dressed up and have boobies and wear a dress and, you know, trying to, I don't know, you know, just trying to get one over on Tom or whatever. I don't know. But you get my point. I don't think it's that bad. I think
it's good. Yeah.
So far, you're 2 for 2. Fine.
Great. Okay. Here's the next one. Okay. So this is from an episode called The Legend of Dratini. So this is, the clip I'm about to show you is about 10 seconds into the episode.
Okay.
And my children were watching this, and I quickly turned it off because I thought, I've got to consult Damon before we persist with this one.
All right. I'm probably the worst person you want to... Okay. There we go. All right. Looks like Clint Eastwood. Oh, it is Clint Eastwood. Okay. So... it's just a point where the old guy pulls the gun.
Yeah, he pulls out a massive revolver and points it at a child's face.
Right.
Repeatedly throughout the episode.
Right.
Pointing a gun at point blank range right up against his forehead because he's he's singing or he's trying to take a Pokeball that he's not supposed to be taking. Okay. There's a lot of guns pointed to children's heads in this one.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. I think it's different in other countries. Like, we're kind of gun crazy.
Yeah, I should point out, I do not live in the United States of America, so right. This is not normalized where we come from.
Right. Now, I do know
Children in the States, I imagine they see this sort of stuff every day at school.
They got a teddy bear and a fucking revolver, just lying across. But I do know of parents who would not have that shown in the house. Again, little kids. And I have a set of parents who they wouldn't call it a gun or a revolver or a rifle or anything like that. It was always a blaster.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Right. They would always refer to a blaster. To me, that's like, it would be, I don't want to say it's in every fucking American cartoon, but like that would be kind of nothing, Now, again, different countries, you don't have the fucking gun comfortability. I don't know if comfortability is the word I'm looking for, but it's not kind of interwoven in a lot of media. So I'm going to say, on all three cases, I think it is about your energy level of how much do you want to open that Pandora's box. I don't think it's about damaging the kids in any way, but it's about, Daddy, why is this? And is that a gun, Daddy? Why would that guy be pointing a gun at a kid? You know, you're going to be doubling your parenting load in that moment.
Yeah.
Not to say that it wouldn't eventually, those conversations may have happened or will happen in the future, but that's what you're exposing yourself to are those conversations when you just want to sit and fucking watch a cartoon. So,
the message I'm getting here is that if Uncle Damon's babysitting, then racial stereotypes and guns are all on the table.
Yeah.
We're going to have a good time.
We're just watching the Republican National Convention on a loop.
Right. Here's the last one. Okay. Now, before I send this to you, do you suffer from photosensitive epilepsy?
I don't believe so, no. Let's find out.
Well, we're going to find out.
All right. Yeah, I don't think so.
So this clip is from an episode called Electric Soldier Porygon. Okay. So you have a watch first.
All right. I got it.
Hopefully you survive this one.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Red, blue, red, blue, red, blue, red, blue, red, blue. Okay. So what we're looking at is like a spacey kind of battle with missiles and lasers and shit and flashy red and blue. No, this is fucking like, you know, not to fucking date me or anything, but that's, you know, Star Blazers and Voltron and shit like that. No, I mean.
So the controversy here was those flashing blue and red lights, which flashing very fast, induced photosensitive epileptic seizures in a lot of Japanese viewers. Mm. 685 children were taken to hospital for this with various symptoms ranging from like nausea to temporary blindness, seizures, convulsions, some lost consciousness.
Wow.
And some were in hospital for, I think it was two remained hospitalized for more than 2 weeks.
Yikes.
So that episode has not been rebroadcast worldwide. That was the only time it was shown. It was shown on, I think it was in 1998.
That's awesome. I mean, that's not awesome, but that's amazing. Does it have a little disclaimer that, like, sometimes I'll watch shows and it'll be like, you know, strobe lights and blah, 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 flashing lights might cause seizures, or even like video games in some cases. There's no disclaimer.
No, I think that's the sort of stuff you get now, but this was
back then,
kind of like the patient zero for that sort of stuff. And it almost like, know what we know now, you'd watch that and think that they've been deliberately and maliciously created to try to
do it. Yeah,
cause epileptic seizures for right. children.
It reminds me of, I don't know if you were ever familiar with the show The Real World on MTV, where they, you know, it's like the first reality TV show where they just put a bunch of fucking 20-year-olds in a fucking loft what in whatever city, and you know, they would live together for like 2 or 3 months or whatever. And there was this guy, it was the London episode, by the way. And there was this guy who was in a band, and he intentionally wanted to make music and noise at a certain decibel, because apparently he read somewhere that if at a certain decibel level, you can cause people to shit themselves. So he was trying to find that sweet spot. What a performer. Okay. So, but knowing what you know now, and knowing what we know now about that, yeah, that might be something I would stay away from. Why push that fucking envelope? You know what I mean? Like if there's proof of that episode causing that much trauma in kids back then, yeah, that would be, I wouldn't risk that.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that opening segment.
Yeah, that's parenting with Joel and Dima.
Educational. Any parents out there have been listening?
Yeah. Yeah. Any wonder why I don't have kids? I didn't know all that was a thing with when it came to the Pokemon and all that stuff. I didn't know that was that there were banned episodes, I guess. Okay, listen, it is what it is. I can't imagine, like, now I'm thinking of it, like, cartoons back in the day, they were probably pretty fucked up. Like in modern, like in today's modern lens, there's probably some shit that's like, oh, okay, that's a little like a little sketch. Yeah, like those Tom and Jerry's and those fucking Bugs Bunnies and all those of the world. Even though they were, I thought they were pretty funny. But what do I know? Yeah, okay, there you go. Times change, Joel. Times change.
Yeah, I find it interesting sort of examining stuff like that through the cultural lens we have today, where a lot of things that were just very widespread and no problem being shown to children back then, now we look at that and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe we got away with that. So
now, can I ask you this? Do you feel that that's, I mean, there's good in that, but I can also see some of the argument of, well, you know, I don't know, we're protecting kids too much or whatever. I don't know. Whatever.
Yes, utter woke nonsense. That's where we're going with this.
Okay, there you go. Just to make sure we're
clear. No, I will not be drawn into that. That's the end of the conversation. We're going to talk about Shingo Takagi.
All right.
Who is in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame.
Hey. So,
did you get a ballot in the end?
No. No, I never did. But
you,
I think,
should have faced up about that, because he would have sent you one.
I'm sure he would have, but here's the thing. I feel like you represent us, you know? Like, I'm okay with it.
Sure.
I'm okay with it.
Well, I was quite pleased, because I think I ended up voting for all the people, the 9 people that did make it in.
Look at you.
Because I did my due diligence. You know, I've researched properly and consulted people who know their onions. And for 3 of the people that made it in that I voted for, Seema, Johnny Saint, and Bobby Davis, they made it in by 1 vote.
Oh.
So my vote counted. That helped them get over the line.
Holy shit.
So that was really quite satisfying to see that you know, the democratic process works.
All right.
So yeah, go democracy. But yeah, Shingo Takagi, Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Thoughts?
Yeah, he probably would have gotten my vote. And it's amazing that people, he's been around a while. He's got a resume on him. Is he a guy that, like, you would first think of, this guy's a fucking massive draw and all that kind of, like, if you're doing your little check boxes? Maybe. That would be, like, maybe my only strike against. But he was, you know, fucking IWGP heavyweight champion. He arguably was the centerpiece of Dragon Gate for a while. It's not like he hasn't had hasn't had tours of the US, Ring of Honor, stuff like that, as well. Previous matches are always great. I mean, you can't discount him from an in-ring work perspective. Like he checks all the boxes for me.
Right, and if we've put Ishii in for that
right
criteria, then Shingo's got to go in as well.
Correct. Yes. And again, he was world champ. So, I mean, that's saying something for this promotion anyway. Yeah, I think I'm pretty familiar with all who were nominated or had the eligibility to get in. But yep, I would say that's a strong pick, Joel. Good job.
Next bit of news was a bit controversy about the attendance for the whatever it was called, Fighting Spirit Unleashed. I can't even remember the name of the show, but a lot of people who were there or have looked carefully at the crowds are saying that the attendance was vastly overrepresented. So the number of people they reported did not accurately reflect the much lower number of people who were there at the venue.
I mean, didn't we say that though? Like, weren't we like, there's no fucking way. It didn't look like there were many people at all, even from a TV perspective. And it wasn't like they were going bonkers or, you know, it was all right. I mean, it kind of aligns with our eye test. So what was New Japan reporting? Like over 1,000?
Yeah.
And people were saying there's no way that was the case. People that were in the building?
Yeah.
Our
friend Jay Michael was quite adamant that there was a massive discrepancy between what was reported and what he observed.
Yeah. I mean, if he was in the house, then, you know, I'm sure he would be able to give estimates. I'm terrible at, like, even when I'm there, I'm like, okay, how many people here? It's either between 1 million or 3. I don't know. But yeah, there are people that can, like, kind of quickly be like, okay, there's 20 seats in this row. There's fucking 14 rows, blah, blah, blah. Do the math. I don't know. I mean, look. I think if somebody really wanted to, they could find the real number. But let's be honest. Okay, so let's just say, like, so they're saying over 1,000 New Japan. And is somebody saying that it's like half of that or just like short of that? I guess my point is this, does it really matter?
Yeah, that's where I fall. I'm like, I've seen the arguing and I've heard both sides and I don't care. It's taking shit. I cannot be moved to any kind of extreme opinion or emotion about these New Japan USA shows.
I'm telling you, I feel like the dishonesty starts at these are New Japan Pro Wrestling shows. You know, great, you have the line mark on the ring apron and you count to 20 for outside the ring activities. But aside from that, they never really feel like a New Japan show. Yeah. I mean, look, if it's 800, like who, whatever. I would love for promotions to be more honest with those numbers, but what are you going to do? I'm sure other event. You talk about sporting events. You know, I've been to arenas where the announced attendance is 16,212. And you look out there and it's like, there's probably not even 10,000 people in this building. And it's probably more to do with tickets that have been bought, but nobody should. All the fucking reasons, you know. So they might have had 12, you know, 11, whatever, 1,000 tickets sold. But, you know, scalpers and bots and all that nonsense and tickets didn't get resold and they just get lost and that's that. They made their money. Yeah, I mean, I honestly, truly, and this is from the bottom of my heart, Joel, I wish they would stop running shows in the US. I really do. Until they fucking figure out what exactly what they want to be. What's that?
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, they should just stop. It's because I'm saying this from the heart, and I'm saying this because I love the product. Like, you don't know what the fuck you want to be in the United States. You have no idea what you want to be. I don't even think you know what you're trying to be. It's not 5 years ago. It's not 7 years ago. Like, you've ruined it. I'm not going to lie. What you've done is you've ruined it. The shows are rarely special, hardly ever great or memorable. They're just fucking shows, to have shows. And yeah, until they figure out what they want to do and what they, who they want to be and how they want to do it, and they stop pinching pennies and fucking, you know, I would be totally, totally fine. And I would actively encourage them to stop running until they figure it out.
Okay, the next stop off, we're going to talk about New Japan Tamashii and the Oceania Cup. Now, have you seen who won the Oceania Cup?
I did, but I forget. Remind me.
Okay, well, let's just take a step back first before we get into that. Do you know who books New Japan Tamashii?
Isn't it associated with the Fale Dojo, right?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is Bad Luck Fale and Jack Bonzer, who do okay. all the booking. They're in charge of all that. If you had the book, you are booking this Oceania Cup, this single elimination tournament that's run over the course of several weeks. What is your mission statement? What is your purpose? What do you want to achieve from booking this tournament?
I want to have people see my local talent and my the wrestlers that are in my promotion on a show that at least will simulate the idea of, we are a feeder system to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and the people who are successful here are eventually going to wind up there.
So when selecting or booking your winner for this Oceania mm-hmm. Cup, what sort of profile are you looking for?
Well, once again, I would hope it would be some a younger team, possibly. It could be someone – again, my idea is to have that section, that promotion located in that region to be, okay, if you make it here, and your goal is to be very successful here, with the understanding that you're the most successful people in the promotion are going to graduate to be in New Japan Pro Wrestling's mix.
So the Oceania Cup, which is booked by Bad Luck Fale and Jack Bonzer.
Let me guess.
Was won by, let me just look this up. It was Jack Bonzer.
How about that? The old Dusty Rhodes. The old Dusty Rhodes booking there. Nice. Listen, you got the book. Why not? Put yourself over.
That's what I would have done.
I mean, of course. That's in the history of pro wrestling, that's what happens. And that's why I will always say that an active pro wrestler should not have the book. Should not have the book. Because then not only do you get that, you get also nepotism, and you get, scratch my back, I scratch your, that's that kind of stuff. Now, you need somebody that's not an in-ring performer, has no reason to, again, you're not worried about them pushing themselves. Unwarranted, maybe in some cases. So I can't tell you, Joel, that I'm shocked by that. I can't tell you I'm surprised by that. I can't tell you that I'm disappointed by that. Like, I've seen it so many fucking times. It's heartbreaking. But the fact is that when you let the lunatics run the asylum, that's what you get. That's what you get.
And how are we feeling about the Wrestle Kingdom main event being rebooked to be Zack Sabre Jr. against Gedo?
What? What did you just say?
Yeah, that's a joke. That's okay. A joke. So,
I got
last
you.
Thing
okay,
I wanted yeah, to okay. touch on.
I got you.
The news.
Okay.
Yeah. You see.
Took me a little bit.
Slick. So, last week, after we released the episode.
Yes.
We got a reply on the old twitter.com from Mr. Aswan TJP.
Yeah.
He said, thanks for watching, guys. I can't say for the other ghoulish dudes, but I can say my face and fangs aren't going away, ever. Too many people like it on both sides of the curtain, especially the merch department. And most of all, I do. If you wonder if it will run its course, don't. It is the course.
All right.
So I did reply to him and saying, why do I only get the replies and the direct messages when I've upset people and not when I'm saying really nice things about them. Right. But where do you learn? Because, I mean, are we guilty of just analysing through the lens, like thinking the product should be booked exclusively for the tastes of us, a bunch
yes.
of...
Yes. Yeah, like we have the microphone. We have the microphone. Right?
Do you think there's something to be said for that, what TJP's talking about there, about guys doing stuff that is, first of all, creatively fulfilling to them? And stuff that we might not necessarily like, but other portions of the fan base might.
Yeah.
I've yet to meet any fans of the Osmond, but I'm sure they're out there.
Again, if it wasn't in some way successful, I think he would pull the plug on it tomorrow, right? Again, these are our microphones. So we're talking about, we try to be as objective as possible and try to take into consideration. But if we're being brutally honest, you know, a lot of times we don't. We're looking at it from our perspective. I don't want to say the liberty that we're taking of speaking for others, but a lot of times, we'll add that spice and that flavor of other people's opinions that we talk to or that we have in our Discord or that we you get tweeted or whatever into that mix. But at the end of the day, go for it, dude. You know, if it's something that you enjoy and you enjoy performing in that fashion and you feel that it's financially there's a return on that investment. And you feel that people enjoy it, go fucking bonkers with it. That's cool. But in the same breath, know that while other people might enjoy it, other people might not. And we just happen to fall into that category on literally that one aspect, right? Because if we're being honest, there have been plenty of times where we've kind of gone against the grain a little bit in the sense of, oh, TJP, whatever it was. I don't even know if it was his political views or his fucking flat, or I don't know. I don't know what bucket he fell into. So my bad. But we kind of put that aside a lot and say, okay, you know, whatever. If we're just talking about what we're seeing from a New Japan Pro Wrestling perspective, like, fucking talented dude.
There was a quote from I think it was JP from the Grapple podcast. He said, do you want to know Tomohiro Ishii's views on same-sex marriage, or do you want to see him throw forearms?
Right. I fall into that boat. Look, there are plenty of people who their product entertains me, like their songs or their movies or their TV shows. But you get to kind of fucking peel back the layers and it's like, well, okay, it's probably not somebody I'm going to go have a beer with. And maybe it is. Maybe they are. But that one portion of their personality is amplified so much that it's like, okay, oh, okay. We have to not like him now, you know? Again, the gimmick, I personally could do without. I could do without every version of it, to be quite frank. But if it works for you, dude, fucking go for it. But we're going to be honest with ourselves and we're going to be honest with the people who listen to this show because, I mean, what else is there? If I feel like I don't have any integrity, at least when it comes to this dopey podcast, like, I don't have integrity in anything. I do. But I would hope that at the very least, you might not agree with the opinions. You might not agree what comes out of our dumb mouths, but know that it's coming from a place of authenticity. That's all I'll say.
Contrary to that, I would say if there's any wrestlers who do listen to the show regularly, let me know in the DMs and I will make sure I only ever say nice things about you.
Right. We'll make that.
I'll sell out immediately. Yeah. For that clout, I will do it. I have no integrity. Right. Anyway, let's move on then. And I will briefly talk about Superhuman Taiji Ishimori Gets Ridiculous, which was actually a really fun show. Okay. I enjoyed it. This was Shinjuku Face. Just a few sort of tidbits here that I thought were of interest to a New Japan audience. Now, the show started off where he's in the ring talking about something that I didn't understand because it was in Japanese. And then the Young Lion music started playing and he ran backstage and then he runs back dressed up like a Young Lion. And he had a Young Lion match with none other than our boy Daiki Nagai. So I pay attention to stuff like that, that Nagai was the guy chosen for this. And I think there's bright things in his future. So that just put a little asterisk there thinking, oh, okay, Daiki Nagai is getting, you know, this is not exactly Wrestle Kingdom, but he was the guy that was handpicked by Ishimori to get this spot. So interesting stuff there. We had Taichi Ishimori in a no disqualification 3-on-2 handicap match with the Brahman Brothers.
Oh, who, God, I hate them.
As far
I really
as I understand it, their gimmick, they just sort of spray water everywhere. Correct. And then Ryusuke Taguchi came out as Brahman Ryusuke. So he was dressed up like them and he joined them to make a 3-on-2 handicap match against Ishimori and Kagetora. And this match ended with Brahman, Kay, and Shu sitting in the corner with Taguchi bent over with his head in their crotch and a metal suitcase in front of his ass, and then Ishimori throwing a bowling ball into the suitcase, right? That was a thing that I watched today.
Yeah.
You know how busy I am. That was a thing that I watched with some of my free time. Then there was a time limit draw with Taiji Ishimori and Kosei Fujita. They went to a 10-minute draw. So again, this match actually ended. The time limit expired while Ishimori was locked in a submission hold. He was on the brink of submitting. So it wasn't like Fujita escaped with a draw. He was dominating there. So I just want people to know all of these spots that Fujita is getting. Fujita's turned into, it seems a bit of a culture war thing. I mean, I know Voices of Wrestling, like Joe Rich, have been talking about Fujita. And I think a lot of people sort of talking at cross purposes there, because I don't think I or you have ever said that this guy is, you know, an absolute wrestling prodigy and he's going to be one of the greatest of all times. Well, that's never the way I've seen him. But what I have seen is an extremely talented young wrestler who has all the skills to make it to the very top, right? That's what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing like a generational talent here, but I'm seeing a guy who I think is going to have an extremely successful career. And even just looking at the trajectory he's on now and the amount of opportunities he's getting, this is a guy who I can see at the very least being a junior heavyweight ace, if not heavyweight. What's your read on Fujita right now?
I mean, it's kind of hard to give you the generational talent. Like, that's, I think that's hard to put your finger on. I mean, I think listen, I don't know if people, given the same time frame, mind you, were like saying that about Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like, I feel like that corner turned, I don't want to say much later, but like, I don't know if anybody, like, people probably had him earmarked to be a great and be top of the card kind of guy, but like a generational talent, that's asking a lot. And again, maybe we're just we're taking liberties with how far they really wanted for that to go. But I think he'll be, I feel like I've said it last week or even the week before, that I don't think he's going to be a junior long. And two, I think for me anyway, he's one of those guys that I can't see New Japan dropping the ball on him and him not being a star, like a top of the card kind of star that is constantly in the mix and that the promotion can maybe not focus 100% on being the things revolving around him, but definitely in that orbit, right? Definitely in that mix. I don't see how someone would not be able to make that connection. And when we talk, and I hate using the musketeer term, but if we're talking musketeers, you know, there are people that are getting a lot of opportunities that might not be the best fit, And there are other guys that are making the most of their opportunities. And there are guys that you see those opportunities now coming in, and specifically him, right? Those opportunities more and more and more and more are happening for the guy. So to answer your question, don't be surprised in 3 or 4 years, you know, maybe even less, that he is a guy. I say it. I think you say it. I think lots of people say it. So I'm kind of, again, generational. How the fuck do I know? But, and truth be told, do I know 100% that he's going to be top of the card kind of guy? I don't. A lot of things happen. Pro wrestling's weird. But, like, I feel like there's
a lot. He's on that path, isn't he?
I can't imagine him not being. And especially all these little tiny opportunities and these little breadcrumby things of, or not breadcrumb, but like, you know, flagpole moments. I think it's happening as we speak.
We had a 6-man tag with a beef team of Sekimoto and Shuji Ishikawa, Jeff Cobb, against Ishimori, Shun Skywalker, and Sho. And Sho was just being a goblin and running around and some double count outs there. That was quite fun. There was an artisanal rumble match with a load of people who are kind of part of Ishimori's history, including Robbie Eagles.
Oh.
Lest we forget, he was one of Ishimori's tag partners in Super Junior Tag League in 2018, I want to say. I think that was around the time when they were tagging together. So that was cool to see him. And it was quite funny because this one ended with, I think it was Eagles and, it might have been Eagles and Kanemaru eliminating each other just as Ishimori entered the rumble at the end. So he's thinking, oh, look, I've come out and I don't have to do any wrestling and I've won the match. But then the countdown started and the actual last final entrant, Jun Kasai, his music started playing and Ishimori's like, oh no, it's Jun Kasai, he's a nutter. And then they did some deathmatch stuff and that was quite fun. You can't have these kind of shows without Jun Kasai appearing. And main event was Ishimori defeating Dragon Dyer in a pretty good match. So a fun watch. I mean, the whole thing clocked in at about 2 hours. Okay. So really fun watch. So yeah, if that kind of sort of wacky sort of smorgasbord variety show sort of thing stands up your street and you're into the sort of wacky Japanese sense of humour, I'd say that's definitely worth a watch, especially if you're a fan of Taiji Ishimori. So there's that. And historic crossover. We had a question here from Jersey Joe Gotch. He says, do you think it actually appealed to the majority of long-term New Japan fans and long-term Stardom fans? And we got a reply here from Chuck McDuck, and I pretty much echo what he said. I agree with him here. He says, Stardom fans, I would say so. New Japan fans, no, not really. All fans are different, but I would say most regular New Japan fans probably didn't care about this show. Most likely don't care to see women's matches on New Japan shows. And unfortunately, I think he's correct there, because I think this show was really poorly built, especially compared to the last one 2 years ago. And it felt that this was more of a gateway show to try to get New Japan fans to watch Stardom than vice versa. And I'll sort of go through it to give my thoughts on it, because, well, first of all, I just want to point out Shota Umino, nowhere to be found on this show, which is interesting. The commentary team, so they had four of them. They had the Stardom team and Walker and Chris. And I don't know if the Stardom people, I think the lady who was on the Stardom side was a wrestler, so obviously not that much experience, but the gentleman, and I'm really sorry, I don't know who it was, who was doing the Stardom comment. Basically, Walker and Chris made the pair of them sound like a couple of fans that have been dragged out of the stands. Like this guy sounded like he was blagging it. It sounded like he'd not actually watched professional wrestling before. So it was quite, yeah, it was not a great dynamic between the four of them, but Walker and Chris were great, as they always were. In terms of matches that had New Japan significance, we had this is what I'm talking about, right? 6-man tag match with United Empire, Callum Newman, Francesco Accurate, and Jeff Cobb defeating Oleg Bolton, Tiger Mask, and Toriano. Right? That's like a road to third match on the card, Arsene and Nowhere kind of match. What is that match doing? on historic crossover. Where's the crossover there? There was a pre-show tag match with two Stardom ladies against two Stardom ladies. Then there was a tag team match with two Stardom ladies against two Stardom ladies. Then there was a six-man or six-lady tag team match with three Stardom ladies against another three Stardom ladies. And then there was a six-man tag match with United Empire against Bolton, Tiger Mask and Yano. So we're one, two, three, four matches in so far and no crossover stuff at all. And I'm just like, well, what is this? What is this supposed to be?
Do you feel like they just show up at the fucking building and they're like, they have no idea. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the shit that just drives me nuts with this promotion sometimes. It just feels like they just show up and it's like, oh, or they forget they even have a fucking show until like the night before. And they're like, oh, I forgot to book this fucking show.
Yeah, it was 1 hour, I count, 1 hour, 20 minutes into the show before there was any real crossover there. One little takeaway from that tag match was that there was a little bit of a stare down between Jeff Cobb and Oleg Bolton. So I don't know if that means anything. I don't know if like Oleg is going to get inserted into the TV title match and make it a four-way. Let's have another four-way. But that was, I thought, notable. There were some crossover matches. Yeah, I mean, they were fine. They were good. I mean, everyone looked like they were enjoying themselves. I don't really have a great amount to say about them. The one match I did want to talk about was the King of Pro Wrestling, the KOPW title hardcore match, where Great O'Khan defended it against Suzuki. And for the most part, it was actually a really good match, up to a point. There were some weapons used, like board of plastic forks, staple gun, all that stuff. Like, that's fine when it's presented within the context of two consenting prize fighters who, you know, willingly entered into the match. But late into the match, there was a spot where Great O'Khan had Suzuki in some sort of submission hold, and then he sucked his thumb and he jammed it into Suzu's crotch, and then he smelled his thumb and licked his thumb, which, I don't know, call me a snowflake. I felt that was a really vile and unnecessary bit of sexualized violence. And you know, given what we know about the New Japan fandom, probably a lot of children watching this, particularly young girls. You know, there are a lot of young girls at New Japan shows. And I just thought that was unacceptable. And there might be some people who don't understand why I'm okay with, like, the staple gun and the forks, but not this. And, well, like, to be honest, if I have to explain the difference, then you're not someone I want on my side anyway, right? I'm not going to waste my time, because I've been down that road before with the Ospreay B. Priestley debacle, so I'm not doing it again. That was disgusting. I really dislike that, which it was a shame, because it ruined what I thought was actually quite a good match up to that point. Clark Connors and Tekla, they look good together. I mean, there was some sort of nice sort of aesthetic stuff where later on down the card, they obviously put some like smart choices made about who was teaming with who. So Natsupoi and Tai Chi against Clark Connors and Tekla, like there was good vibes going on that one. Very strong match, the IWGP Women's Title match. Mai Iwatani defeated Momo Watanabe, and that was a genuinely really, really good match, and something that I may even put on our ballot for match of the year, because I did have a good time watching that. Like, that's the sort of stuff I want to be watching, where I'm thinking, hey, I should be watching more Stardom. And again, I think that was the mission statement for this show. It seemed to be, let's see, can we get some New Japan people watching Stardom rather than any sort of meaningful camera? I mean, maybe that's how it should have been. I don't know. I preferred the first historic crossover show better. And they have announced the women's match for Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it is. Right. It's Mai Iwatani. Oh, she's defending against Azumi, I think.
Okay.
And I think last time they did the women's match at Wrestle Kingdom, they got about 4 minutes. So it's, you know, it's all well and good, like, giving us these 25-minute epics where we're like, yeah, this is great. But then if it's, as you would say, 10 pounds of shit shoveled into a
£5 bag.
What £5 bag? Then, and you know, they're rushing to get all their stuff in 5 minutes on Wrestle Kingdom. I kind of think, well,
right,
what's the point? Don't bother doing that. If you're not going to give them the time to actually put on a reasonable.
And wasn't it a dark match before, like last year? Like, it didn't even make the main show, correct?
I'm gonna have to have a look.
I'm sorry.
Up,
you know, I mean, don't worry about.
No, I want to because I want to have the facts.
I don't think
on
it was main
side.
Show. Yeah.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wrestle Kingdom. Now, was it? I don't know what I'm doing. So, Wrestle Kingdom. What Wrestle Kingdom number are we up to? What was it this year? Was it 18 this year?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, 18. Now, was there a women's match on that? So, there was no women's match on this year's Wrestle Kingdom. So, then we're going back to Wrestle Kingdom 17. And there. Oh, God, this was a two-night one. So, okay. We had night one, Kairi defeating Tam Nakano for the IWGP Women's Championship in 5 minutes, 56 seconds.
That was in the main card?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, if it's 5 minutes, I think, well, what's the point? Don't bother. Right. Either it properly or don't do it.
So, I'm going to rewind to the question of... Do New Japan Pro Wrestling fans give a fuck about Stardom and vice versa? Do Stardom fans give a fuck about New Japan? I'll say they want to. I think to a person, they want to. I think one of the biggest problems is just what you just explained. Is like, why am I going to try and invest in something that they obviously don't care about? The partnership is so weird, and it seems like so everything's always feels so last minute when it comes to New Japan using and utilizing Stardom talent. I don't watch Stardom, not because necessarily I think it's a bad product. I think it's a very good product. Not because it's something that there's only so many hours in a fucking day, number one. And number two, quite frankly, I think there are people that love all pro wrestling. Like, they don't give a fuck what promotion it is. It could be Noah, it could be Stardom, it could be fucking Freedoms, it could be AEW, it could be MLW. Doesn't matter. There are people that stick to their fucking camp. You know, I'm a fan of, and you see it all the time, probably more than anybody, you know, especially with fucking Twitter, you know. I'm camp AEW. I'm camp Noah. I'm camp whatever. And they stick in that. They're fucking lean. Here's the thing. Every time New Japan gets involved with Stardom, and I always go back to these dumb US shows, the women's matches are usually some of the best matches and some of the stuff that I enjoy the most. But when the fucking rubber hits the fucking road and it's time to give them something to and New Japan fans to sink their teeth into the Stardom product, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Come on. Really? You're not going to make a fan in a 5 minute match. It's going to be hard. Like what do you expect these young ladies to do? What can they possibly fucking do to win over an audience in 3-5 minutes or five, you know what I mean? Like, and it's always just stuck in these on shows where there's a focus and there's an intention and there's an absolute purpose. It feels like it could work. The problem is that they just throw shit out there. They just, okay, we'll just get these two people and, you know, I don't know. It's difficult, but I blame New Japan. I blame New Japan. I don't blame anybody else but New Japan because they have this commodity that they could use to help build that promotion. And it seems like at every turn, it's like completely, you know, it's just throwaway, and I and. I tell you what, if there are people that listen to this show that are hardcore, and I know there are, that are hardcore Stardom fans, right? Because we had them on our show. Hardcore Stardom fans. I don't think they give a fuck about the New Japan partnership. I think they feel like it's nice that there's at least some steadiness when it comes to the influx of cash. But aside from that, I don't think there's one person that's like, oh my God, we got to keep, you know, this is, we got to keep this moving. like they don't give a fuck either. You know, as much as we're like, kind of like, I don't know. They're doing the same thing, but on the other side, you know, they're like, is this really worth it? Is this helping us in any way? I don't see it, but.
The weird thing is as well, because as of, was it in June that New Japan fully acquired Stardom? Mm-hmm. So you'd expect to see sort of more joined up thinking and sort of cross promotional stuff and, you know, getting their ducks in a row as far as promoting both the things together. But it just seems to have got even worse since then. But
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't have any
crossover.
I don't know why, but it hasn't worked yet. And it doesn't seem like there's a ton of effort that goes into it. And I feel like the people that are expecting it to be bigger than what they've seen are walking away disappointed. And I don't think that the goal of doing this is helping with the goal of expanding their audience at all. I really don't.
A little news tidbit here. So there's a women's cup for a title shot between AEW, CMLL, ROH and Stardom for January 5th in Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Dynasty. So AEW, CMLL, ROH and Stardom will hold qualifying four-way matches to determine a competitor in a final four-way, which will take place on January 5th at Tokyo Dome. And the winner earns a title shot of her choosing. So
okay.
A four-way women's match.
5 minutes.
Hooray.
Yeah. I'm giving 5 minutes.
Bell rings. Yeah. Come on, wrap it up. We've got to take it home.
Take it home. Yeah. Look. Here's the problem, and you know what I'm going to say. If they give them time, it could be very good. If they give them time, it could be very good, but we'll see. But once again, 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound bag.
Well, Tag League, I watched night one.
Did you?
And again, I'm just going to give a really quick, brief rundown here. Shoma Kato got his first win. He's grown his hair out a bit. He's actually looking quite good. So well done, Shoma Kato. Keep an eye on that one. The Natural Classics botched their finisher in their first match, doing it on Murashima. And I don't know if that was Murashima's fault for not managing to sort of lift himself up for the kind of dual powerbomb thing that they do. But I watched that. I was like, oh, because they look quite good. They've got like a good look, the Natural Classics. But then that happened and I was like, oh, God, I hope they don't do that in their actual tag league matches. There was a really funny moment where, so there was an undercards tag match. Oh no, it wasn't an undercard tag. It was the actual World Tag League. So Jeff Cobb and Callum Newman beat Shota Umino and Tomoaki Honma, which was actually quite a good match. I mean, there was good energy to it. But then afterwards, Jeff Cobb absolutely fucking buried Shota Umino under the earth. He was like shouting, went right to the commentary booth and was like pointing at Shota and said, "That's the main event of the Tokyo Dome? That guy? Bullshit." So I'm just getting vibes that Shota Umino is not a very popular guy backstage, because that seemed like very unnecessary but also extremely funny, and I respect it. So then we had the team with Alex Zane, and Alex Zane, a mystery partner, an ex, and a lot of speculation. All the other podcasts, oh, who's it going to be? It could be this guy because he's got history. It could be this guy, and it's Taguchi. And I started, someone said, I can't remember who it was, it might have been on the Voices of Wrestling Slack, but quite a fair speculation that maybe they put X when like they genuinely don't know who it's going to be. They're like, fuck, we've got no one. Just put X for now. And then the night rolls on. We've not found him. Oh, fuck, what are we going to do? Taguchi, get Taguchi in there.
Yeah, he's not doing nothing. Yeah, I'm sure. You know what? As ridiculous and as, you know, comical as it sounds, I nothing would surprise me with that. Yeah, I mean, look.
Do you think we can get Taguchi to fill in for this podcast during World Tag League?
That would be something. Let's do it. Let's line it up.
But anyway, they had a match against Yota Tsuji and Shingo Takagi, and Tsuji and Takagi won. And it's a very promising team, actually, Tsuji and Shingo. And again, I'm going to approach this with a caveat that they have stressed, Tokyo Sports, that the winner of the World Tag League does not necessarily have to challenge at Wrestle Kingdom. So it doesn't automatically preclude people who already have matches at Wrestle Kingdom. But they did say the same thing about the Super Junior Tag League, and look how that ended up. So I wouldn't necessarily say that gives us much information either way. But I like the team, Tsuji and Shingo. They need to tighten up the dual finisher they do, whether it's a pumping blaster or a gene bomb or whatever they're calling it. But I think sort of by this point, I'm overall happy to have teams that are probably not going to win if it means we get cool dudes having cool matches. Right. I'm fine with that. I'm not a purist like, oh, he's got a match at Wrestle Kingdom, he can't be in World Tag League. I just want to see good wrestling matches. Then there was Bishamon against Chase Owens and Kenta. I was just watching this through the lens of watching Chase Owens and thinking, is this guy like wrestling to save his job? Because normally he'd be sort of sleepwalking through a World Tag League, but he looked a lot more animated, taking more bumps than I would normally expect during a World Tag League. And just kind of sort of, there's a sort of whiff of desperation about him that he can sense that he's being phased out. So,
all right, but do you honestly think Kent is taking those bumps? Like, somebody's got to take it. Right.
Yeah. But strong start for Bishamon anyway. And there was a really good main event with Oiwa and Zach defeating the Sonata Gabe Kid team. Oiwa got a flash pin over Gabe Kid, and obviously they're going to be facing each other at the next US show. And good match. It was a good first night at World Tag League. I won't be watching any more of it, but a good way to launch us into our World Tag League hiatus. So night one, pretty decent if you got time to kill. Why not? Check out the main event. It was good because the Oiwa Gabe Kid stuff was good. And you get to see Bullet Club War Dog Sanada with his new hair, his new attitude. So, yeah, there's that.
All right. Listen, I can't believe it ends relatively quick. Like the entirety of the tournament, what is it, like the first week of December it ends? Like that seems very
quick. Yeah. So in terms of programming, we got some people lined up do some guest hosting for us. Yeah, I think we might even get the World Dad League back with our friend Jay Reesemid, John, who's I think it's his birthday coming up. So happy birthday to him!
There you go.
So him and Elliot, hopefully they'll be able to fill in at some point. And we've got Kaz, who is a co-host of the Didn't Get All of It Japan podcast, who I think is going to be teaming up with
Chris Abroad.
Not Chris Abroad. Uh-huh. No, even better than that. It's the RV and boats.
Oh, really?
Our friend. Yeah, Factory Direct Marine and RV.
I tell you what, if I'm looking for an RV, that's a guy I'd hit up.
The only conditions that have been put on the guest hosting have been imposed by Editor Dan, who says they have to review a song from Escape the Box.
Nice.
Otherwise, he's going to put fart noises all the way through.
That's fucking awesome. Good job. Good job, Dan. Yeah. Dan's still putting in the fucking, he's still logging the hours. So yeah, he gets a, he's got to get a little bonus in there. Good for him. Good thinking. Hey, speaking of which, he had a little BBC play. I know, are well aware of that. That was pretty awesome for him.
Oh yeah.
Good job. I escaped the box. Nice job.
So we are planning to be back for December 9th. We'll do our World Tag League final review. December 16th, we might be working on a little historic crossover of our own with another brilliant New Japan podcast. Hey, look, I'm just going to throw this out there, keeping it strong style. If you want an actual proper breakdown of historic crossover with insight and analysis from the Stardom side, go listen to their episode because they did it way better. They had Karen Peterson on and she knows her shit. So they broke it down properly with all the storylines. And if you actually want to know what the fuck is going on with Stardom, because believe me, you didn't get any of that from their commentary team, go and listen to Keeping It Strong Style because they did an outstanding job with that. So
thanks. Well, good job. Good job, boys. Good job. Josh, good job.
And Jeremy and Karen.
Good job, Karen.
Right. So that's all the wrestling stuff from my end. I think last year I fucked up with the scheduling and our year-end awards, because it gets so busy at the end of the year with, you get World Tag League Final, and then US shows, and then Road to the Dome, and then Wrestle Kingdom previews come up, and I wanted to make sure that we get the year-end award ballot out nice and early. And I know the year's not finished yet, and we might yet get some Match of the Year candidates in World Tag League or Strong Style Evolved or possibly at Road to the Tokyo Dome. But I'm happy with just putting it out as it is and rolling the dice and taking that risk. So I thought it would be a good chance for us to, on this podcast, to finalize the ballot, and we'll just have a quick talk through the categories. Anyone on there that you think I've missed, or anyone on there that you think should not be on there, we can have some arguments about that and just sort of give general thoughts on, you know, maybe some predictions, who we think is going to win, without giving our picks, because I've not decided yet who I'm going to vote for. Then we've done that, I can get the ballot finalized and send it out soon.
I mean, look, I'm glad that we're doing it again. I'm glad that we, you know, I think last year was weird just because you're right. It was so busy. And then even like the end of the year was busy, you know, it was like, you know, it was everything. So, but no excuses. And I will say this, like, to be very clear and pull back the curtain, Joel does everything, right? Like, I don't do.
Well, I want to give a shout out actually to Troy from the Discord. Okay. There is a channel in our Discord for year-end awards. And every time something year-end award worthy has happened, people have been discussing it. And Troy has been making a list.
Good job,
and
Troy.
Pinned it. So when I went into the channel, it was like, right, guys, I need your help. They're like, Troy's already sorted it, mate. And I had all these wonderfully pinned lists of all the stuff that beautiful. People have nominated. So
beautiful.
He's definitely helped with that. It's obviously still going to be a pain in the ass for me to put all that over into a Google form, but I will do it because I love doing it.
Yes, love that. I'm sure you do. but again, like Joel does everything when it comes to
this. I was going to say, because I'm hoarding all the deli money at the moment, but I'm not hoarding it. It's just resting in my account.
Until collecting interest.
How we're going to invest it. Yeah.
Right.
So we've got Wrestler of the Year currently on the ballot. David Finlay.
Okay.
Doki.
Okay.
Gabe Kidd. Hiroki Goto. Shingo Takagi. Yota Tsuji. And Zack Sabre Jr.
Okay. That's a pretty, as one might say, an eclectic mix. I think that is one of the more diverse lists of new names to Wrestler of the Year that we've had in a very long time. I mean, usually it's, you know, your Okadas and Ospreys and Tanahashis and...
Naito.
Right. Like...
If someone had told you at the start of the year that Doki and Goto were going to be on the Wrestler of the Year list,
right,
you'd have them commit to a mental asylum.
Seriously. I'm trying to think if there's anybody that was missed, that was overlooked. Nothing glaring. I'm sure somebody will is screaming at their fucking radio right now. Or their computer. That's a solid list. That's a solid list. I don't think there's anybody we missed. And honestly, I have my top three in my head. So okay, and they're in that mix. So good. All right, I like that.
I have a feeling that Zach is probably going to be the favorite.
I think so.
I do think Finlay has a shot, depending on how many, you know, hardcore freaks are voting. That I expect him to get a bit of traction as well.
I don't know. Like, that's going to be the weird one for me. Like, that, not that he doesn't deserve votes, don't get me wrong. I just don't know if other people are fully on board with that, for whatever their reasons. And do I agree with that? No. But I think that's a reality. How about Doki? I think he's going to get plenty of votes. Who do you, of the younger guys, do you think it's Yota Tsuji third or in the mix?
I'm going to hold off on that because we've got our breakout rest of the year, so we'll save that for then. So match of the year. Now, this will probably need pruning because it's very long. There's 42 matches on it so far. And a lot of these I have absolutely no recollection of, and it's sort of Discord freak nomination. So if it's a match that you have zero recollection of, maybe we sort of put an asterisk by it, if not outright delete it. So
you're not reading 42 Arne fucking Danielson matches, please. Please don't read off.
All right,
I'm sure whatever I want is in that mix of 42. But I'll say,
okay. Yeah, what do you think are the favorites going to be off the top of your head? What were the stand-up matches that you think are going to get big votes this year?
Well, every year, you know, you're getting Wrestle Kingdom representation, right? Every year you're getting G1 representation. So I'm trying to think outside of those boxes. What was it? The junior tag that had an outstanding fucking match? I liked, you know what I really liked? And you're going to, and it might not make anybody's list, but I loved the Best of the Super Juniors final. I don't think there's 42 fucking contenders. Like, I think legitimately there are probably 10 to 15 at most that are true, legitimate. This is a match of the year. New Japan this year did not have 42 contenders for match of the fucking year. Would you agree with that statement?
No, I'm looking at some of these. We've got two matches nominated from Fantastic Amazing.
Stop it. Really?
We've got a Shingo versus Evil match that I have no memory of.
Come on. You may...
Someone's put Naito Moxley there. No thanks.
Stop. Here's what this is.
Someone's put Moxley Evil.
Come on. Like, here's what that is. That is, I like... I don't know. Fucking... I'll just go... I like Duran Duran. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Duran Duran is one of the greatest rock bands of all time. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... That would just be a silly statement. Did they have they had a great album? Yes, I truly believe that they have an absolutely great album. They might even have two great, like, front to back great albums. But let's be honest here. Come on. Just because you liked it doesn't mean it's great.
And bear in mind, you only get three votes for this. Right. If it's a top 10, that'll be one thing. But top three, I think there's a lot of these that's not making anyone's top three.
So correct.
I'm going to be ruthless with this and start pruning that. Show of the year, we've got Wrestle Kingdom, New Beginning in Osaka, mm-hmm. Best of the Super Juniors Night 2, mm-hmm. G1 Climax Night 1. G1 Climax Night 12, there's a bit of controversy about that. That was the Korakuen one that was main evented by ELP versus Takeshita and also had...
That was good.
Gotto versus Finley. It's kind of like a two-match show. Not that the other matches were bad, but there were two standout matches on that. And there's a lot of arguments about whether or not that constitutes a show of the year, but I'll put it on anyway. King of Pro Wrestling and Power Struggle.
Yeah. What was Duntaku? I forget what that main event was, which probably is me.
All right, let's have a look. So Duntaku 2024... It was a two-nighter. So, night one, main evented by
Nick Nemeth
defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yeah.
And night two, main evented by Moxley defeating Ren.
Okay. Yeah, that's not winning anything. Yeah, I think we got it. Nothing in the U.S. And we're not counting like AEW Forbidden Door bullshit.
No. That's an AEW show,
correct.
Tag team of the year, we've got Bishamon, Catch-22, Connors and Maloney, Ichiban Sweet Boys. Now, someone's put Mad Bastards on here, the Gabe Kids, Jake Lee team, which never got started, and TMDK.
Okay. La 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 la. You said Catch 2-2's in there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a weak year, I think, for heavyweight tag teams. I think this might be the year that a junior tag team...
Would there be any consideration for the never six-man tag team champions of Bolton, Tanahashi, and I don't even know who else. Who's the third in that team?
Yano.
Oh, God. No, there's no consideration for that, right? Correct?
No, I think their matches were fine, but never better than good. Okay, Junior of the Year, we got... Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, no, I was going to say, I think we nailed that one. Okay.
Junior of the Year, we've got Doki, El Desperado, Hiromu Takahashi, Kosei Fujita, Taiji Ishimori. So this was a tricky one because really, I think that Doki, Despi, and Hiromu are the only three really credible candidates. I think pretty much everyone is going to be voting for those three in some order. And I've even had some people say that they don't think Hiromu should be on it. So Fujita and Ishimori are kind of there to make up the numbers because they've been there the whole year. And right. They've been delivering at a consistently high level, but I do think it's between the first three.
Yeah, and if we're given love as a tag team, that's taking that. So I wouldn't separate. You wouldn't put TJP in that mix, would you?
No, because I don't think he's got the output as a singles wrestler to justify that.
Right. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that would be
because of his shit gimmick.
Is there anyone else that you would put in that mix?
Show?
I mean, I'll say this. He at least was a focal point for the juniors, right? At various times of the year. I can't sit here and tell you that I'm getting a fucking boner over the match quality, but he was in the mix quite often. So if somebody did cast a vote for show, I could see the argument to a certain degree. I think he should be in.
Right,
and let the people decide that. Yeah, I think show in is. Here's the thing. I don't think show in and available to be for a ballot to be cast in his name is going to discredit the junior competition. I think there's an argument to be made for him to be in.
For unsung wrestler of the year, we've got Badu Tito, Clark Connors, Hiroki Goto, Kushida, Robbie Eagles, Taichi, Yoshihashi, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
Hmm.
Now, can we have Goto on that ballot if he's also nominated for Wrestler of the Year and for Tag Team of the Year? Is he really unsung if he's on those two ballots as well?
That's a good point. And I think the unsungness, if that's a word, it's not. I just made it up, is based off of he should have gotten more than the tag titles.
Okay, all right. So are we sort of interpreting unsung as the push is not matching
the output,
what they delivered this year? Yeah.
All
right, we'll leave him on.
I'll leave him on. Because here's the thing, too, and we've said it 1,000 times, too. If he was in New Japan at any other time period, he would probably be even more of a star than he is.
For breakout star, so what I did here, I actually merged two of our things because we had most improved, and then last year we introduced breakout star, and I found that there was a lot of overlap between those. Mm-hmm. It was quite sort of hard to differentiate between who had improved and who was a breakout star. Cause a lot of that, some of that is actual improving in ring performance. And some of that is the push, who the office is designed to push. So I just decided to merge that with just breakout wrestler of the year.
Good call.
And we've got a really interesting shortlist here. David Finlay, Doki, Gabe Kidd, Kosei Fujita, Oleg Bolton, Yohei Oiwa, Yota Tsuji, Yuya Uemura. And we've got some shouts from Walker Stewart.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, look, if we're talking about improvement, I think everyone would agree that's the case. And again, this is traditionally, we're talking about the in-ring performers, but if we're being honest about a pro wrestling show,
I'll have to call it breakout performer, not breakout wrestler.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair. I mean, it's a guy who's gone from relative unknown to now, I hear a lot of people saying that he's the best Western play-by-play guy out there at the moment, which there's a strong argument for that.
Speaking of which, did you see anything from that Tyson, I want to say Gabe Kidd. Oh my God. What was his name?
Is it Jake Paul? Paul
Fundraiser. Paulie,
yeah, Tyson Fundraiser.
Yeah, I mean, that was nonsense. But the announced, I can never pronounce his name, Ronaldo was doing the play-by-play. I was just like, oh, there he is. There's a guy. I remember him.
Every time I hear Mauro Ronaldo, I think of that. Someone posted a tweet. I'm trying to find what it was. So, oh, fuck. Right. So, Mauro Ronaldo. I'm not going to find it now. You talk a bit. I'm going to find it.
I'll tell you my every time I hear his voice and I think of him, I think it was Pride. When he was, there was some type of documentary on him. I forget where it was, whatever. But there was footage of him having like a little panicky attack in the middle of Tokyo, and he's just like running the streets of Tokyo, like going in and out of shops, and just on tilt. And I always feel like and I always just remember seeing it, and I'm just like, oh my God, I feel so bad for the dude, because it's like. Like he's out of control right now, and like I just feel bad for the dude, because what do? You're in the middle of fucking Tokyo. You don't speak the language. But you're going through a fucking episode, and I just like it breaks my heart every time I say it. What's the one you said? What year you got?
I found it. So this is from 2016. This is at JackBaker1311. It says, "Cut Mauro's brakes, but the moment of sweet revenge ruined as you hear shouts of shades of Paul Walker as he's engulfed by the fireball." So every time I hit Mara, I just think of that tweet.
Good tweet. That's a good tweet. Don't tell me X is dead. Come on. You get fucking gems like that. All right. Anyway, Walker Stewart in the mix. I think that's appropriate. I like that. Because again, it's a part of the entire presentation. I think it's good. I'm trying to think. Do we miss anybody else? What a list that is. That's a pretty...
I know. It's really competitive, isn't it? Like, yeah. Really interesting. I think speaks volumes about what the mission statement has been from New Japan and the good work that they've done getting that new generation. You know, if not elevated to the level where we necessarily want them to be right now, but there's certainly a lot of young, hungry wolves chomping at the bit to...
Hungry like the wolf. sorry. You know why I had to do that. Yeah, it is. And here's the thing. Think of this. We're exactly where we wanted to be when we talked about transitions and making of new stars and the future, all that stuff. Like, look at the names on that list. And not for nothing, look at like the big boy awards, wrestler of the year and tag teams. Like, all there are a lot of names that we haven't discussed in when it came to year-end awards. And this is, I would say, absolutely, this is one of those years that you could call a transition year. But they are chugging along the right path. And these ballots all reflect that. And I think that's, just think next year. Okay? So, like, this is, like, I think it's the first year that we're really talking about a lot of these people that a lot of hopes and dreams for this promotion resting on. And the fact that, you know, New Japan committed to this and New Japan, didn't fucking shy away. Like they went for it.
I think to some extent it needed that kick up the ass of Ospreay and Okada leaving.
Yes.
Facilitate that.
Here's the thing. As scary as it was, as frightening as it was from a lot of people, it needed to be done. You're exactly right. Because if, imagine if they were still here. Would we have good matches? Absolutely. Would we have epic matches? Quite possibly. What do we have, new stars? I don't know. I can't guarantee. I couldn't tell you. And I think having – look, I think everyone's in agreement that if we're being brutally honest, having them leave, I would take them back in a heartbeat. I would. I know that's odd, but I would. But the fact that the hands were forced and we had to play with the cards that were dealt and actually make stars, I think it's actually for the better. As strange as that may sound, it's for the better. Because what we've done is we've opened up spots and we've opened up opportunities that probably wouldn't have been there if, like, we weren't forced to do it. So, yeah, that's a crazy list, but it's a good list and it's an exciting list.
We've got a new category this year. We are throwing in Moment of the Year. So here are the contenders. We got Zach winning the G1, Sanada becoming a war dog, Shota getting booed when challenging Zach, Bolton beating Tanahashi to qualify for the G1, Great Okan going on a run by beating Naito in the block finals, Okada ignoring Okan, Oiwa's return, Goto winning in front of his kids, Jake Lee beating Shota, Sanada saving Naito from House of Torture at Wrestle Kingdom, the juniors main eventing Dominion, Tsuji winning the New Japan Cup, and Great Okan eating an entire lemon in 30 seconds.
All right. I think Moment of the Year, we're missing one. One would be the Super J Cast was right.
Oh, yes. We're going to that one. So Super J Cast was right about Okada.
Yep. Super J Cast was right. Yeah, I mean, some of them are silly, but yeah, I think I'm just trying to think if there's anything else, but no, I think it's pretty solid. Matt Riddle winning? No, you don't have that in there.
So that would be under disappointment of the year.
Ah, okay. All right, let's go there.
All right. Okay. I think it should be there anyway. Okay. Yeah. So, right. So disappointment of the year, we've got booking ex-WWE wrestlers, Nemeth and Riddle, / first half of 2024 booking. The Aswang, which this is a bit harsh. I'm not sure about that. I didn't put that there, if you're listening, TJP. Top New Japan wrestlers exodus to AW, so Okada and Ospreay leaving. Forbidden Door 3 booking / current AW New Japan relationship. John Moxley, IWGP World Title reign. Injury / health concern bugs are Watto, Yo, Uemura, Lee, Finley, Tanahashi, Hanari, ELP, Akira, Narita, and Desperado all being on the shelf for significant periods of time. All together shows Kazuchika Okada retirement road booking, Shota Umino, Tetsuya Naito's failing body, Alex Coglin's retirement, and Chase and Kenta winning the tag titles twice.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. I think the biggest one is the AEW thing. And not for nothing, as I like to say, we still feel that to this day. And the ramifications of it are being felt even into the early portions of the new year. How about that? Yeah, I would put that top of the list.
So that's the whole ballot. I mean, there'll obviously be a couple of extra things for you to choose your favorite wrestler, least favorite wrestler, favorite faction, and you can sort of nominate your own categories.
Yeah, the funny one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I love that one.
I will try to have that out maybe by the weekend.
Wow.
I'll stick it up on the Twitter and the Discord. And yeah, I think let's try and get the votes in nice and early.
Listen to you. I love it. Guy's got fucking 5 minutes of free time a day, and he's pumping out this kind of shit. Look, you guys. Man, I tell you, you found gold with Joel. I'm telling you, you found fucking gold. All right. That's a good list. I think I'm very happy with that list. I think we hit a home run. And I think people have a lot to sink their teeth into. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see where it goes. Cause I think there are a few that, I don't know, but relatively, you kind of can point to a winner, but I think there are plenty of other ones where it's like, ooh, it's really up in the air. It's really up in the air. So, yeah, we this is the one time of year we say it all the time, and you know we love to pump our fucking chests talking about who listens and who doesn't and who who's kept abreast of New. The one of the greatest moments was we had a person within the company. I won't say if it were a wrestler or a what have you, but we'll just say we were contacted with basically the gist of the message being, how the fuck did you guys know that? That was really one of those moments where I was like, ah, look at us. Look at us. So this is the moment where not only the two dopest with the microphone have their say, like you get your say. And if you, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that our awards people use to do anything with the company. They might just fucking laugh at it. Who knows? I don't give a shit. But know that eyeballs get on it. You can be a part of that. Just like Joel was the deciding factor in Big Dave's Wrestling Hall of Fame, you could be the same. You could be the same. So this is the one time of year where your voice, aside from you buying tickets and product and all that shit, but you kind of like let us know and let the company know what you like, what you don't like, what you're saying, who deserves it, who doesn't, and all that fun stuff that makes us the best pro wrestling fans.
All right. See you on December 9th, bastards.
Goodbye. We're on vacation. Fuck y'all. Bye.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.